I'll just try to go one by one, and I'll try to be quick. I'll try to be as quick as I can, because I want you guys to ask more questions as well. The first one is, why doesn't everyone just use a smart? I wish I could show my slides here, and maybe that might get somebody over there to help me do that. But here we go. Boom. So I want to show you a picture and answer the question, why not everyone should use a smart, okay? I want to show you something I said early, right at the end of my talk. There's something I said. So here's the bottom line, okay? There's two things. There's two ways I'm going to answer that question. Number one, if you're not in the business of wanting to develop an adaptive intervention, you don't need a smart. That is hands down, that is true. Because if you're not in the business of developing an adaptive intervention, that is, if you scientifically don't have any desire to develop an adaptive intervention, if all you want to know is, does treatment A versus B work, rather than what treatment, a sequence of treatments works, you don't need a SMART. The SMARTs are designed to develop adaptive interventions. That's the first answer to that question. It's a really insightful question. The second answer to that question, okay, is, you know, he made a distinction between SMARTs and RCT. I want to be really clear about something. SMARTs do not replace RCTs. I want to say it as loud as I can, actually. SMARTs are part of a new wave of experimental studies that are used to develop behavioral interventions. See, in the old days, this is how it used to be. In the old days, we used to have pilot work, feasibility data. You know, you did your dissertation, you came up with a proposal for a behavioral intervention, and you jumped straight to the RCT, and you evaluated it. And there were many probably little steps in between, but the little steps in between were rarely experimental. That is, when you were building the intervention, even a non-adaptive one, there was no experimental thinking in developing it. Nowadays, we have a whole new framework. The RCT stays put. That is, in fact, our flagship for evaluation. The pilot studies and feasibility studies stay put. We all need that. That formative work is so important. I'm not saying that goes away. That has to remain. But now in the middle, we have experimental designs that could help you further using experimental data empirically build together your intervention. Everybody with me? SMARTs are part of that middle ground now. Y'all see that? So when Connie and Anne, when we are all done, and Tris, when we're all done building that adaptive intervention in the second study, if we wanted to, and if review bodies fund us, we can do another RCT where we take the best adaptive intervention we found in our SMART versus whatever treatment as usual or control is in the community. Y'all see that? That second study would be the RCT for evaluation. Our SMART is the experimental design for building. Everybody with me? That's the conceptual framework. I really love that question because it's so insightful. I'll just try to answer one more because I'd rather hear you guys talk than me. But so many insightful things he asked. The other one I really enjoyed was this idea of individual differences. I want to show a slide real quick. Okay. Here, let's go to the SENA study. We call it the SENA study. Okay, let's pretend we had a slightly larger sample size, okay? Roger was saying, well, look, all the adaptive interventions you talked about, they give all kids JASP or all kids JASP plus ACC because whichever one you found best on average. Okay. I want to be really clear, okay? If we decide to give, let's say, all children that bottom adaptive intervention, right? You're right. Not all kids are going to benefit the same way from JASP plus AAC versus JASP alone. So in fact, something we are currently undergoing is moderators' analysis to inform further individualizing the adaptive intervention. So in some ways, this is the tip of the iceberg. These three interventions is just the beginning. It's no different from when you guys analyze your randomized trial and your very first paper is just, is A better than B on average? That's all we showed you today. But there's going to be other papers coming, hopefully, knock on wood, where we're going to investigate moderators to really help us decide who are the kids for whom we didn't have to augment with a device. And when we find that, we're going to have a lot more than just these three interventions. Y'all see what I'm saying? But SMARTs get even more exciting. I gotta say this, hold up. SMARTs, it gets even more exciting. Let's go now to our second study, AIM. Get a load of this. This is something you couldn't do in an RCT, all right?
only can you individualize first stage treatment using your moderator's analysis that we all know so well, we were trained in our graduate school and undergrad, but in a SMART, you can further individualize second stage treatment. Let me tell you how. These randomizations permit us to understand, for example, among non-responders, among all the non-responders, there's still heterogeneity among those non-responders. There's those that were really bad non-responders and those that were just on the cusp of non-response, not response. Everybody with me? Let's take all that heterogeneity among those non-responders and find out which one of them really needed the rescue or the salvage treatment or the blended, whatever word you want to use, versus which kids would have done just fine on JASP. So in fact, what you'll see is you'll see papers coming out where we try to answer these additional questions that Roger, you know, really insightfully asked about further individualizing. And what you'll end up seeing is that you're going to get adaptive interventions that are much more complex than these. However, all of those analyses, the rules don't change, y'all. All of those analyses are secondary and tertiary analyses, right? Because they're moderators. They're hypothesis generating. Everybody with me? It's the same conceptual framework, you know, in some sense, right? Our first pass and what the data end showed you was the primary and secondary aims we know we could address. Everybody with me? Okay, I'm going to see if, let me see if there's anything else, and then you guys can ask some more questions. Clinical judgment. Yeah, I totally agree with Roger. There's one end of the spectrum where there's absolutely no clinical judgment, really rigid, and then the other end of the spectrum where the clinician willy-nilly just does whatever they want. Actually, I want to be really clear. Adaptive interventions are indeed manualized interventions. Yes, they are. Let's say the bottom one was in fact it was the best adaptive intervention. That's a manualized intervention. There's a protocol for how you do JASP with the device, and Connie and Anne and Tris, they all tell you, you know. And there's a whole protocol for how you determine response and non-response. You guys remember Anne's slide on how she defined? It wasn't just willy-nilly, you know. This person's a non-responder. No, there was a protocol. In fact, adaptive interventions are manualized. They just go a little bit beyond. They go a little bit beyond just saying, do treatment A. That's all they do. They try to operationalize the sequencing of the treatments over time, but they're still manualized. Okay, I'll stop there and let you guys ask a few more questions. Thanks so much, Roger. Again, Roger. So does anyone have any other questions for the group, for any of four of us? Yes, over there. Yeah, I'm gonna let Connie or Anne chime in, but I do want to say something, and they, you know, they'll have their opinions about it. There's no requirement, and I'm pulling from my experience in other areas because I work across other areas, not just autism. There's no requirement that the same clinician is at every stage of treatment. So, for example, in substance use disorders, your relapse prevention treatment later on, or your rescue strategies might be by a whole different person than who provided your initial CBT. But in autism, it may be different. Would you guys like to chime in on that a little bit?
So I think that the question is whether one person could do all those different treatments with training. So I think we start off thinking they would be very separate, that we didn't want people to be, you know, sort of blending different pieces in that first randomization. But in fact, because of we have these fabulous therapists who actually can learn all of these different treatments and apply them and do it at fidelity. So we're a research project, so we can check fidelity very carefully. And one person can do all of those. But it is the case, depending on, you know, staffing and scheduling and everything else, that it could be a different person. But the people that are doing these interventions are at fidelity, and we spend hours, this group right here, spend hours, and where's my other group? Over there, spend hours doing fidelity, training and testing and calls and et cetera. So one person can do all of those things. Are there other questions? Is this for Danny? I bet it's for Danny.
Let's hope it's for Danny.
I'm happy for anyone in the group to answer. I'm a clinical researcher from Australia, and for me this is really impressive because I think it really does fit in with my clinical side of things as well as research, you know, doing good research. I guess for us in Australia, we're such a small population, and the sequence of, you know, you do your feasibility, your pilot, your SMART, your RCT requires really big numbers. So I guess I wonder, and maybe this isn't a question for you guys, but more for Australians, how big the numbers need to be to take it to its final stage. And then also in the American context, how happy funders are to fund these sorts of projects.
I think they were pretty happy to fund this one, but you know, I guess the proof will be in the pudding as to what we come up with. But Danny, you can answer the power. So we were we did a lot of work on the power analysis in terms of determining how many kids we needed. And I know for SENA, we had powered it at about 90, what was it, Danny, 92 kids? But we didn't reach it. We our recruitment machine wasn't as good as it is now. And so we ended up with 61 or 62 kids and still got effects. But I think, Danny, why don't you talk about that? It's fairly involved.
This is a great question about power, and Roger alluded to it a little bit. I want to just say something that all of you already know, so in some ways I'm just echoing something you already learned. Any experimental design you ever do is powered, the sample size is chosen based on whatever the primary aim of that design is. Everybody with me? I think there's universal agreement on that. All of us methodologists believe that. That's just how we think. So whatever your primary aim is, right, that's why we need one single primary aim with one single outcome. Because that's the one thing we know we're going to walk away with a particular type 1 and type 2 error. Everybody with me? So SMARTs are no different. Even though SMARTs are really exciting, a study like this can answer all of these questions. We only powered it for our primary one. And that's why we're really clear. And if you read our grant, if you read our research protocol, we put our bets on this is our primary aim. And so the 192 kids we chose for this, if I recall, actually this was over a year ago, if I recall, it was to detect a moderate effect size between starting off on JASP versus starting off on DTT on spoken communication, okay? So it was to detect that effect with, you know, 5% type 1 error, you know, 80%, you know, power. And so that's how we chose that sample size. Now, of course, in a SMART, that does mean you may not have power at the 5% level, you know, and 80% power to answer all the secondary questions. That's perfectly okay. It really is okay. That's not your primary aim. So, for example, we might tolerate a slightly higher alpha error. For the secondary questions, yes, we might, okay? And that's perfectly okay. We all get way too caught up with our alpha 05s and things like that, losing sight and forgetting that those alphas are based on whatever your primary aim is for which you powered. So that's the logic. It's the same logic for an RCT. It's absolutely no different. Most people in an RCT will not have adequate power at, you know, 80, 90% power for moderators analysis, for example, or their secondary aims. So it's the same concept. Did I answer that appropriately? Okay, and then the other question Roger asked, and then I'll be quiet. It's so exciting. He asked something about the timing, you know? He's like, well, why 12 weeks? Why 24? Could the SMART be used to inform timing? It can, and I don't have time to show you today, right? And it has nothing to do with autism, but in other areas of research, like in substance use research, all right? There's a SMART in substance use, which is another area I work in, where they had to try to define whether the alcoholic was a responder or non-responder, and they had two choices, 2 or more heavy drinking days per week or 5 or more heavy drinking days per week, or 2 at week 2 or at week 5. In fact, we could do a SMART that randomizes the first randomization to 2 different definitions for what the trigger for non-response is, a stringent one or a not-so-stringent one. Sky's the limit. And it's informed by whatever scientific question you're trying to answer. Okay, that's it. Any other questions for anyone in the group? Really exciting. Thank you all for coming out today.